Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Perfect Imbalance. On this show, we bring together conversation and expertise. My name is Jeff Way, and I'm the founder of Perfect Imbalance, the first podcast to challenge the myth of work-life balance and explore alternatives for improving overall well-being. Each week, I'll be interviewing different thought leaders, elite sports performers and entrepreneurs to understand how they are achieving happiness, success and greater fulfillment in their lives. So here's to you, the listeners, joining us each week. Welcome to Perfect Imbalance. On this episode, the final episode of Series 4, I share my interview with Chris Lovett, life coach, speaker and career mentor who most recently has channeled his energy towards making a different choice. On this episode, we discuss his journey from music and being a DJ through to radio and podcast host, and now a leadership coach. We talk about minimalism and how you can make it bespoke to you. We get into the idea of collecting experiences and not things, and moving away from busyness to proper face time with our employees. This is a fascinating insight with a practical 30-day challenge at the end. Here's Chris. Chris, thank you very, very much indeed for agreeing to come on the show. It's an absolute pleasure to be able to spend some time with you, so thank you very much.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Jeff. I'm really looking forward to it.
Good man. Now, we spoke in advance of you coming on the show today, and I've given you a flavour of a perfect imbalance and shared my thoughts around work-life balance. Chris, I like to dive straight in and ask each of my guests, what's your thoughts on work-life balance?
Again, this is it's a really good question to kick off, isn't it, Jeff? And before we start, it's great to connect with you. And it's almost as like, you know, when you find a good artist, when you're really into music and you find a good artist and you find they've got a massive back catalogue of stuff you can go through. This is what it's like with all your podcasts. So it's like finding a good artist and then you can go back and listen. So I'm looking forward to that. That's all right. Yeah, it's all right. What my thoughts on work-life balance, to be honest, it feels like I've been talking about this for a while. I used to strive for whatever the work-life balance was, but I don't think that aiming for balance should be the goal, because we may have like intermittent moments of balance during life, but life's just too chaotic and complex to really strive for balance. It's too many variables, too many things going on to achieve balance long term. So I always kind of see it as more thinking about my whole life, you know, which encompasses work, relationships, you know, side projects, hobbies, things like that. And it to be fluid. Similar, like I always kind of look at it like a modern relationship. So people used to say, oh, everything's split 50-50 with your partner. But actually, that's rarely the case anymore because, you know, as humans, we go through like peaks and troughs with our physical, mental health and finances, different work shifts, hobbies, patterns, friends, all sorts of stuff. And we need to actually do more than what the perceived 50-50 is, because there'll be some days where your partner might not be around. So therefore, you've got to do more. You know, it might become 80-20 for that 1 week. You know, your partner might be ill or, you know, working too hard or whatever. So therefore, you pick up the slack, and then vice versa. So it's a constant fluid approach. And I always look at that similar to what is perceived as the work-life balance. So, they're my thoughts on it, Jeff. It's just keeping it fluid. And the ultimate aim is, with this, is to have the right resources to deal with whatever scenario comes up. So if there is more work that needs to be done, you are in a good position to do that. And then when there's days that are not as busy as others, again, you have the right resources to deal with that. So yeah, keeping it fluid, Jeff, from my perspective.
I love that thought of keeping it fluid. And when you you know, make those links and associations to how we've perhaps approached things in the past and how we might view a modern day relationship. You're absolutely right in terms of what you're sharing and the point that you're getting at there. You know, balance is rarely static. And if we do have those moments where we have some balance in our life, then great. The reality is that because there's so many different pressures and so many different focuses, we're going to find ourselves out of balance, and that's okay. And I love that thought that you kept coming back to, that the fact that keeping it fluid. In many ways, Chris, what you've done is you've summed up pretty much what my guests have said during the course of the show in the previous episodes on the previous series. So there is no definitive as such. It's just having that level of awareness and understanding, you know, where your priorities and your focuses are. And if something's out there and you want to do something about it, then do something about it. So thank you very much.
That's all right. Keep it consistent. It's good. Absolutely. That's interesting to know that same thought process has gone through your previous guests. So yeah, it's great.
It is, and it always surprises me, even though I have an inkling that might be the case, and in part maybe the, you know, part of the reason why I choose the guests that I do. I'm keen as always to share my thoughts up front, but that's not necessarily to influence any of my guests, but really just to provoke the thought and the conversation around balance means different things to each of us. And if we can, you know, again, get that level of awareness and understanding, then great, we've got a good starting point. Yeah. Chris, for the guests that are tuning in, hopefully not for the first time, but regular listeners, describe what it is you do and why people either want to work with you, interact with you, or starting to connect with you.
I do a few things. This is normally the bit where in a corporate environment you have to give an elevator pitch. I'm not gonna do that. But there seems to be a theme at the moment of me supporting others through a passion. So winding the clock back a little bit, just give you a bit of context, is I wasn't particularly great at school. My lunchtime was, well, actually my classes were more born around picking the right teams for a game of football at lunch. I was the organizer. I used to go to different classes and pick the teams and things like that. So I always used to work on the logistics and things like that. And football was a great love of mine. It still is. And I always imagined that I'd be a professional. And then when I got to about 16, 17, I realized that actually that's not going to happen. So I went into coaching. So it started when I was relatively young. So coaching always seemed to be there and supporting people to be better at what they really enjoy doing. I then got involved in the corporate environment and worked various different places. And I've now ended up as a leadership coach via the music industry, being a radio DJ and a club DJ and a podcast host. I've done 5 years of music podcasts, setting up music events. But ultimately, all of that, when I kind of look under the hood, all of that was to either make people aware of various bits and pieces that were going on that might not have been aware of before, to develop others, either musicians, artists, or footballers, and now leaders, or to share experiences through my own kind of mistakes and life achievements and things like that, and then let others know so they could learn from that. So so I answer your question, I coach, and why people want to work with me is because I don't tend to play by all the rules all the time. I am a minimalist, which I'm sure we'll come onto in a minute, but my approach removes a lot of the excess around people's lives and environments, which seems to be appealing. It's an interesting concept, minimalism, and my experience researching it and going through it myself is quite intriguing. So people want to understand how I've gone from being this guy who was in so in their comfort zone that it was blind, you know, covered in debt, had too many belongings, found various bits and pieces very difficult to do, to where I am now, where I'm, you know, looking to continue and unlock my own potential. So people seem to be drawn to this at the moment, and hopefully I can just help people through their own personal journey. And it's great to hear other stories and things like that. So yeah,
it's interesting backstory.
Yeah, I do love to put context on it, Jeff. But yeah, it's I'm quite calm. You probably realise that already. I like to make good relationships with people, because I think that's the core around anything that you do, is making good relationships and being a bit of a people person. And then coaching has just come off the back of that. And then the minimalism lifestyle has kind of overlaid all of it. And now I feel like I can go out and tell people a bit of a story and then help them along their way.
It's intriguing. And it sounds like minimalism has come along at a point in your life where, even though you've got a vast experience of, prior to that, helping others, supporting others, clearly, you know, an organizer within that, that journey that you've been on in terms of minimalism has had quite a profound effect. And I know through, you know, listening to you on Gary Turner's podcast that you've alluded to that as well. I'm going to come on to that shortly. Are you still involved in the music industry, Chris, or is that something that you have moved on from?
Yeah, I've still dipped the toe in. So I used to have my own radio show. That was for about 5 years. And off the back of that, I did some podcasts where I interviewed unsigned artists, some of them which are now signed up and signed to major labels and are almost household names.
Wow.
And when I found minimalism, I had to make some choices around what added value in my life. And it reached this precipice where my hobby and my passion around music became almost like work. And I'd started to fall out of love with music. And I thought, actually, you know, that can't happen for me, because that is my main thing. Music is my thing. If I fall out of love with that, that's going to be quite difficult to come back from. So I had to make a choice. And I cut a few things from my kind of music project that I was doing. So I was running live events regularly, like once every 2 weeks, which then led me to go and travel all over London and Brighton. I was doing a radio show as well, and the podcast, and I was DJing as well during some evenings, working with some artists, unsigned artists, on developing their sound and their public profile and things like that. And it all got a little bit too much, so I had to cut some bits. But I still provide a service for unsigned musicians around the world, and they can reach out to me, and I provide a service where they will send me a song, a track, a remix, a demo, whatever they want to send, and I will provide them feedback. So it's a bit like a life coaching, where they'll say what their goal is with that particular song or their journey in music, and then I will give them some tips that will help them on their way. So I do dip my toe in, but it's a lot less than what it used to be.
I love it, and I've got loads of thoughts running through my head about music and radio, having dabbled in internet radio a few years back, and also had Tim Roberts on the show, who's a huge music fan.
Brilliant. Maybe we should do a music podcast, Jeff.
I said to you before we came on air that you ought to be careful what you wish for.
Good point.
Can you share any of those artists that have sent you music in the past that are now coming through?
Yeah. So during the earlier days when we were putting live music nights on in East London, they would be free. They'd be free for people to come and join. So there would be no tickets or anything like that. And often the artists would only get paid through me paying my own money to them, or the venue paying me to supply the artist for the night. But we had, I'm not sure if you how your X Factor knowledge is, but we had Raxu come down, who won X Factor, I think, in 2017.
Wow.
They played, we paid them about 40 quid to come and play, but which was unheard of, because they would normally, they wouldn't even get paid for any performances that they would have done at that time. So we were quite progressive in regards. So we would actually give them a little bit of money that we could afford, but at least it was something.
Yeah.
So Raxu have come in and played. There's an artist called Nilufer Yanya, who has gone on to perform on, you know, those late night Jimmy Fallon type shows in America.
Yeah.
There's one called Stephen Colbert, I think. She was on there the other week. Koji Radical, who's a hip hop artist. He's now, I think next month, he's playing at the Royal Albert Hall.
Wow.
So there are some great artists that we've come across that are, that have now gone on and to make it big in inverted commas, but they're doing what they do, and they're doing what they love, and they actually have that as their job.
It's fascinating, and you talked about, you know, making some decisions in your own life around music so that you didn't lose that love of music, which you can tell just listening to you, you still have. Is that in part of the reason why you still offer that service, that feedback service to unsigned artists? Because you've got a feeling, you've got a sense of connection with music and people coming through?
Yeah, it seems to marry up the coaching and the music part quite well. I didn't want all these experiences around, you know, doing radio, meeting all these amazing artists to go to waste. I want still to support people and help people through their own journey. So when people do require that bit of assistance, I'll sometimes put them in contact with some of the people I've worked with before, which will hopefully get them on their own journey and things like that. So, yeah, but that's a whole other podcast, Jeff.
It is. And I want to dive into minimalism and get some of your experience around minimalism. And to put it into a bit of context, really, I came across minimalism before I even came up with the idea of producing my own show. And it was listening to a podcast called The Minimalists that really provoked lots of thought in my mind, and at the same time allowed me some space to then switch off from the social media world for 4 to 6 weeks, really, and get my head around how I might go about putting a podcast together. So I've got some of my own experience, but I'm sure there's people listening that haven't necessarily come across minimalism or indeed understand what it is. So Chris, can you share with us what your experience is and how you're using that, or how that's helping you along the way in your journey?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we probably watched that minimalism documentary on Netflix quite a similar time.
Yeah.
It was almost as though I was going through that particular process, but I couldn't figure out what the end goal was. So I think I might mention before, I was in this big comfort zone, and I had these aspirations and things that I wanted to do, but I would always, you know, put up these barriers to stop me from doing the things that I found were really important. So one of the things that I wanted to do was to go traveling. So all my friends had gone traveling, you know, backpacking and things like that in their younger years. So they all had these stories, and they would reference back to them when we'd all go out in groups and things like that. And I never had that. And it was something I wanted to do, but I was just caught up being busy. Not on anything particular, I was just being busy. And over the course of, you know, a number of years, I'd made a number of these decisions that society would tell me that I would need to do. So I'd need to get a proper job, a full-time job. I need to get my own home, a car. You know, I need to look a certain way. it was all about comparisons. I would compare myself to people in magazines and celebrities and people on TV. So therefore I'd have this persona that I'd have to keep up, and therefore I'd be buying more stuff. And that then stopped me from doing, to go and traveling and doing other bits and pieces that I wanted to go and do. And, you know, it was almost like this, there was this prison that I'd created for myself, which I was in debt. I had quite a bit of debt, and I had loads and loads of stuff in my flat. When my partner moved in, obviously then she had her stuff. So we combined all of the stuff in our 2-bed flat, and the stuff lived in harmony together in boxes. And we would buy other stuff to store the stuff. And yeah, it was just like, you'd walk in and there'd be this environment where everything would be so closed in. So, you know, I didn't feel as calm. I felt that I'd create these barriers like I mentioned earlier. And yeah, and I had to make a decision, and I thought, you know, I had to sell a lot of my stuff to go traveling, because obviously traveling is not cheap. Accommodation, flights, experiences that I wanted to do, this wasn't cheap stuff. So rather than getting another loan and going on more debt, I started to sell the stuff. And as I started to let go of clothes and various other bits and pieces, I then struggled with why I found it really hard to let go in the first place, because I then attributed all this emotional attachment to my things. So I had guitars, so I was learning to play guitar, so I had 3 guitars. Of course you need 3 when you're practicing. But for me to then sell the guitar, it would in my head, I thought that if I sold a guitar, I then couldn't practice anymore and I wouldn't be a guitarist, which actually is just rubbish really, because, you know, you could still go to a school and have lessons, or, you know, you can still make it work. You don't need 3. Similarly with the clothes, I would have all these really cool t-shirts and, you know, which I thought defined me as a person, that super cool guy that wore Saved by the Bell t-shirt. Oh wow, he's so cool. It wouldn't fit anymore, right? But I still keep it just in case, you know, that time ever came where I wanted to go out and be that cool guy that wore the Saved by the Bell t-shirt, because that defined who I was. So after I started getting rid of all the stuff, I then started to let go of inhibitions, comparisons, what people thought of me and things like that. And obviously then selling the stuff removed the debt, which I let go of that. It enabled us to actually go away and collect experiences rather than things. And, you know, by the end of it, I had nothing. I had no stuff or no car. I had taken a career break at my job, in knowing full well that it was just a matter of time before I'd be quitting. My partner quit, she didn't have a job, and we sold our home. So we literally had not a lot of stuff left. Whatever was left, it was just stored at my parents'. So things like a sofa and some other bits and pieces, and that, they were all stored at my sofa. But I always remember there was this time when I looked at my key ring and there was nothing on it. So there was no work fob, there was no pass, there was no car key, no house keys, just nothing. And that feeling was incredible. It was almost like I just hit the reset button on my life and gone, right, we start from now. And now I can curate my whole life, starting with these experiences that I'm about to go and have traveling. I can, you know, I know what I want to do with my life in regards to work and side projects and various bits and pieces. So removing all that stuff really hit home and was really powerful for me. But I didn't know what it was that I was doing. And only when I was in Vietnam, we were traveling with Vietnam, we'd lost half of our clothes by then. And we didn't have a lot of stuff carrying around with us, but we were just having the most amazing time. And it dawned on me that actually I could live with a lot less and be even happier than what I was before. And we put the iPad on one day during one of our chill out days, and I found minimalism the documentary, which I watched, and I was like, wow, okay, this is what we've been doing over the last 6 to 9 months. It makes so much sense now. And then what I've done since I've been back is marry that into real life, because obviously traveling is a part of your life that you can't necessarily do full time. But how am I going to bring that into my lifestyle now? And I've managed to do that with my work and my home and things that I buy and things like that. So yeah, it layers my whole lifestyle. And yeah, it's quite powerful.
It sounds hugely powerful. And I'm looking around the study in my house now.
Thinking, yeah.
I'm surrounded by stuff. And yes, I use some of it. And yes, some of it is nice and on the wall or whatever it might be. However, we have been conditioned in most cases. You're clearly doing better, or in my view anyway, than I am in terms of this. But we've been conditioned to accumulate stuff, and with that, to go back to what you were saying, allow that stuff to define us, whether that's the car that we drive or the brand of clothing that we wear. All of these things actually are just about stuff. And what resonated with me most as I'm listening intently to you describe your journey with minimalism, even before you actually realized it was minimalism, or certainly going down that route, was that you were collecting experiences and not things. And I think myself, when I allow myself the opportunity to disengage and disconnect, it does very much become about those experiences being a lot more heightened and a lot more powerful, rather than worrying about the things that we may or may not have or are told we should have. I suppose the thought running through my head, Chris, is how easy has it been for you to do that? Because I'm thinking from a listener perspective, some people think, well, I couldn't get rid of this, or I couldn't get rid of that, or I couldn't be without this thing in my life. But actually what I'm picking up from you, and I know through speaking to you, is that it's hugely empowering, and it's actually lifted a weight or allowed you not to carry this emotion around that you would naturally attach to each item of your stuff. So how easy has it been for you and also your partner to go through this experience?
Yeah, there's the good thing around minimalism, it's so bespoke to you as an individual that you can choose the spectrum that you want to be on. I mean, I'm not here to preach or anything like that around being off grid or only eat vegan. You know, there are a certain minimalists out there that go, you know, own less than 100 things, and only wear white with no advertisements on it whatsoever. There, you know, that's next level stuff. I'm not here to to preach any of that, but the bespoke lifestyle that you can layer for yourself is to fit you as an individual. So for me, the physical act of removing something from your environment is pretty straightforward. So if you had, you know, say if you lived in a, you know, like I do, we live in a 2-bed flat in London. We have 4 plates, which is fine for the two of us. But my parents, for example, the kids have flown the nest. There's only 2 of them living there now. They've probably got, oh, I don't know, 30, 40 plates, you know, dozens and dozens of glasses and things like that, but they're decisions that have accumulated over years. So the physical act of removing those things out of your environment is easy. The actual attachment that you've got to the stuff is hard. But once you make that first step, it then becomes so much easier to then remove stuff out of your environment. So the physical act first, I would always recommend doing that, because you'll always find stuff that you can discard or sell. You could throw away, donate, or even, you know someone that would actually get more value out of it than you are. And then once you get into that habit then almost embraces you or envelopes you, and then you start to question things more easier. Does this thing really bring joy to my life? You know, I've had this thing in the garage for 5 years. You know, does it really add value to my life? Does it serve a purpose? And you're asking all those questions, and it then slowly turns from being your physical items to then potentially the apps on your phone or the emails that you've subscribed to over the last 10 years that you keep getting every day. But what you do is you just swipe and it disappears. So you can start to unsubscribe from those things. You can even go as far as relationships. You know, if a relationship is causing you more negativity than it is positivity, does it add value to your life? And things like that. So it is the physical act of removing a thing from your environment. Yes, that's easy. The emotional attachment potentially could be quite difficult. But actually, once you get that, once you rip the Band-Aid off, Jess, you start getting rid of stuff every day. You start then really focusing and looking around your home, like you have on this particular podcast. You know, looking around and looking what's on the shelves and thinking, yeah, I've not looked at that for years. That could add value to someone else. I could donate that. I could sell that. So yeah,
there are lots of things I love about minimalism, and knowing that you and I were going to be speaking, I made a conscious effort to actually decide to unsubscribe from every email that I get sent through. Because when I look at probably a good proportion, a good 95% of them, they're not actually adding any value. Yet what I would have done previously is what you just described there, swiped and deleted or archived it on an iPhone and not thought anything about it. However, when I've weighed up how much time I will give to looking at emails and replying to emails, even spending a few seconds deleting it and then getting another one the next week or another two that week, it's just not adding anything to my life. So since we spoke previously, I have been on a bit of a mission to unsubscribe from every email that I've been subscribed to. Even to the point where this week I went into Debenhams, knowing that when they asked me for my email address, that they would subscribe me to their newsletter. I did. I gave it to them, but then came home and when I got the email, unsubscribed. And it's been a sense of relief in some ways, because I'm no longer going to have that little distraction, however many 5, 6, 7 times a day when I'm going onto my email. And I don't know if it was listening to you or if I'd read something as well, but actually in terms of my email now, when I'm getting email, it's going to be important rather than a load of dross of a load of subscriptions. Yeah. And I've tested this in a couple of the organizations I've been into in the last couple of weeks, and I've said, you know, how many of you have been on holiday this year and come back and then looked at your inbox and it's been full? Or you've had over 100, yep, lots of hands go up. Okay, so how many of those emails did you really need to see? Probably less than 10%. Right, okay. Yeah. And that's the thing, because we've been conditioned to, you need to check your emails, you need to make sure you clear your emails. In some cases, people will obsess about email and have to clear them down over the weekend before they then start again on Monday. Mm. For me, I'm feeling a sense of calmness, knowing that actually there's a strong likelihood, and I don't think I'm there yet because there's a few that haven't sent me an email yet, but once I'm there at that point of not being subscribed to anything, when I do receive an email, it will have value added attached to it rather than somebody trying to sell me something or convert me to buying something, and therefore, you know, getting back on that wheel of I must have this stuff, I must have it now, when actually I don't need it. So you've had a profound impact on me already, even though, you know, in terms of time that we spent together, it's been minimal, but it's been
yeah, there we go.
Okay, I love it, and I sensed through speaking to you and also listening to your episode and conversation with Gary, that not only has it had a profound effect on you, but this is something that you're able to take into other people's lives, the organization that you're working within and the leaders that you're speaking to, and also outside of that. You're talking quite a lot about minimalism, and what are some of the things that you are suggesting or recommending to people who are fed up of being caught on this hamster wheel that we're all on, in terms of how they can make some little changes and then start to see a difference?
Yeah, well, you've mentioned one already, Jeff. The email is a good go-to, both personal and work. So the good thing is that you can map it across your own personal life, and if you work in a corporate environment, you can do that as well. Whatever type of environment you are in, it can fit to you as an individual, which is great. The good thing is, because it's your stuff, you can take action immediately, which is clearly what you've done, Jeff. So there's the ease in it, and that's why I've gone and tried to speak about my experiences and how people could be feeling without even knowing it, without even being aware, self-aware of all the stuff that they're buying, and just kind of turn the light on a little bit for others and say, you know what, right, this stuff that I have experienced has been massively enlightening. It feels like a massive weight off my shoulders. And now all of a sudden I've got more time, and I've got more resources, energy, to explore some of the things that I'd always wanted to do. So we grow up, and you know, when we're at school, we have these grander ideas around we're going to be a footballer, we're going to be a firefighter, all these different bits and pieces. And then life throws a load of stuff at you, where society says you've got to fit into a certain box, and you will go along on that wave, drifting along. And some people will wake up and start to take action, but not everybody does that. And for me to kind of explain this drifting along that I was doing and collecting stuff over a course of years based on decisions I was making, and then to cut it all loose, it does resonate with people. So the act of actually physically removing stuff from your environment is pretty straightforward, and people can take action straight away. I've done a few talks where, very similar to yourself, Jeff, they've come back to me a day later and they said, I'll just let you know, I threw out 10 pairs of shoes last night. And I was like, well, okay. That's great. So you've taken action immediately. And then it's down to you to then continue that on in other aspects of your life and things like that. But I absolutely love it when people come back to me and say, because of what you said and the experiences you've had, I've taken action. And that is why I am going to go out and start talking to people about it and start spreading the word. People can choose to take it on fully and have a massive minimal life, you know, live in the country off grid. They can choose to do that. That's fine. Because it's so bespoke to them, they can take away their own individual actions and take action immediately.
I can see that empowering and also scaring the life out of some people.
Yes, it does.
and the angle I'm coming from is, it, some people find that hugely empowering, that it's bespoke and they don't have to follow a certain formula. They can look at themselves, they can make decisions, whether it's email, apps, physical items. Other people that don't have a framework or a template of start with this and then move on to this, they may find that scary as hell, because it's where do I start? And I think you've hit the nail on the head, clearly, not just for yourself, but in terms of how you share it and position it with people, is just take action on something. Because actually what you'll find is you'll find a reaction or response to it. And if it's giving something away, then you've got more space in your wardrobe, or you've got more space on your bookshelf. If it's, you know, gifting it, selling it, whatever, you know, it's entirely up to you. I actually love it, and my wife does as well, when a charity bag lands on the doormat, because that's an opportunity. Whereas in the past, we'd be like, oh, it's another charity bag come through. we actually went through the process of filling them up and then putting it back on the driveway, but we realized very few people actually come and collect them, sadly. So we still go through the same process when it drops on the doormat. We fill it up with clothes, items, stuff, and then take it to the local charity shop. So somebody is benefiting. At the same time, though, we are benefiting ourselves because there's this feeling of less crowdedness and more space, more room to think. And it takes me back to one of my favourite stories at the moment with my little girl. And that's one of the Julia Donaldson stories called A Squash and a Squeeze. I don't know if you've come across it, Chris, but it is a children's book. And it's about an old lady that lives in a small house. It appears to be a one-bedroom house. And she is saying that her house is too small. She needs more space. And this wise person comes along and says, take in your animals one by one, which creates more chaos. And she thinks it's absolutely bonkers and crazy. It causes more anxiousness. It causes her to become even more and more overwhelmed. And when she says it was quite big when it was just me, now it's absolutely teeny weeny, he says, get rid of all your animals. And then that process of taking them all in, getting rid of them all, actually she arrives at the point at the very end where she realizes there's plenty of space for one. So it's quite poignant. And what I think what I love most about how you're describing your own journey and also what you're sharing with other people is it's through the art of telling the story and sharing those experiences rather than, look what I've come across. This is what you should, you know, absolutely do in your life. This is, you know, the best thing that you can do. It's very much about other people. And that goes back to, you know, your childhood when you were 16, 17, wanting to help people, organizing people. I love the fact that when you said you've done a couple of talks and people have said to you, the day after, I've got rid of 10 pairs of shoes, or I've done, because of what you've said, I've done this. That for me is something that I can associate with a lot, because that to me is one of the biggest rewards of coaching people and being able to coach, is when people say, because of what you've said, I decided to take this action. I need to go home and think about it and maybe have another conversation with somebody else, but I've decided to do something different. And as a coach, a fellow coach, I don't think there's anything more rewarding than when somebody starts to take control of an area of their life and start to do something different.
That's it. Yes, bang on, Jeff. And you mentioned around the storytelling part. I have another story if you'd like me to share.
Absolutely.
Because you know, when I do go out and do these talks, I do say that, you know, almost tongue in cheek, like, this is not a dramatization of. This is not for entertainment purposes. You know, all this is true, and it is. And I could have just, you know, gone through these life events and just thought nothing of it. But actually, I look back and reflect and pull all the amazing bits and pieces out of it that can then help others. And when we returned from traveling, obviously, now you know that, you know, we didn't have a place to live. So we stayed with my parents for a few months, and they like to keep stuff, shall we say. My mum especially loves the old childhood toys that me and my brother used to play with. They were kept in the loft. So my mum had passed away last few years ago, and clearing out the house, there were certain possessions that my mum then took into their house and that had just stayed there. And one of them was a bag of stamps. So they put it under the stairs. So when I was looking for something, and I said, what's this? And she said, oh, it's a bag of stamps from Nan's old place. It's like, oh, okay, we're going to do them. And almost that sense of, well, nothing, but they are from my mum's house. Therefore, they do have some emotional attachment. So that kind of conflict in her mind, saying that, you know, that was her mum's stuff, but actually they don't serve a purpose anymore. They're not there for any purpose other than to fill up space. That was a real difficult thing to overcome for her. The point, if you're living with other people and you want to try and influence minimalism on others, just do it yourself. Don't tell them what to do, because they won't register. Don't don't nick their stuff and sell it on their behalf. That's fair. but what I was doing was, you know, slowly but surely influencing and asking the questions, you know, so what are you going to do with these stamps? You know, they're still out on in the hallway, people tripping over them and things like that. And she's like, oh, I don't really know what to do with them anymore. You know, I don't have a purpose for them. So that's when I opened up the eBay portal for her, and just kind of showed her, you know, there's people here that want to buy these stamps. You know, there might be collectors out there. You could add value to this individual and sell them stamps. So we sold all those stamps. And every time she got a ping come through, or every time I told her, oh, someone wants to pay £20 for a whole bunch of these stamps, she's like, really? That's amazing. And she wanted to know where they're from and what they're going to do with them. I was like, I don't know what they're going to do with them. It's not, with eBay, you don't really go through that part of the transaction. But similar with my dad, like my, you know, we talked about music before, you know, my dad's a massive music fan. They were both in a band. And he collects records, vinyl records. But they were never on display. They were in the loft, so never played. And my dad would tell me these stories around, I've got an old Motown first pressing of Aretha Franklin or something like that. He goes, that's probably worth 100 quid, that is. I'd be like, oh, yeah, let's prove it. And he went, oh, what do you mean? I was like, well, are you playing the records? He's like, no. Are they on display? Are you visually getting joy from them? Like, no. You know, is there a risk that these could deteriorate because they're in the loft and it's warm, they could warp? He's like, yeah, you know, collecting dust and things like that. So we ended up almost creating our own record shop with the thousands of records that he collected over
the
decade. And it was fast that going onto the internet and looking at how much those records were worth was that gave us a better bond than had the records been sat in the loft, not doing anything. And we spent hours, days and hours looking through these old records going, oh, blimey, that one's worth 60 quid. And, you know, and through that time, we found amazing records that were worth up to £500 for like small 7-inch ones. And he was like, I had no idea. I had no idea I had this treasure chest up in my loft. You know, I was just collecting records and not doing anything with them. So I said to him, I was like, so what do you want to do now that you know this information? And he's like, well, let's get rid of them. So he now uses the money that he's made from the records that he was not playing to buy other things that now add value to his life. He bought an iPad yesterday, right? And he listens to all the tracks on his iPad. You know, they go away. They've been away on holiday more times in the last 18 months than they have done in the whole last 25 years, based on the money that they've made from these records that were just up in loft collecting dust. So again, that's another true story, Jeff, and hopefully other people can resonate with that. If there's things that are in their home that haven't seen the light of day for a while, you know, they could be very valuable to someone else.
Absolutely, and there's a real practical element there as well in terms of helping that older generation, our parents, to go through a bit of decluttering and at the same time realize some value which can then be turned into other experiences which they may or may not have had, because I'm guessing your parents are, you know, probably similar age to mine, or maybe slightly younger, where the onus was very much on working towards retirement and that particular model of thinking. And saving along the way if you could, so that your children had something when you were no longer here. Given the fact that generation is, we're told, living longer, then there is another practical element there which is so helpful for them to be able to take advantage of as a natural byproduct of the experience that you've been going through that you're able to share with your parents.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, hopefully, like I said, this resonates with your listeners, and you can take action immediately, whatever your scenario. But that lifestyle, I would have never even have thought of that had I not gone through all these experiences myself, and put myself in a position to be able to you know, to ask those questions and challenge in a way that would potentially change people's perception. But yeah, it's been a fascinating journey, and it's only just the beginning.
And I sense that. And I sense that for other people who find minimalism or come into contact with people that are, you know, going through this experience positively. I'm thinking back to all the research I did a couple of years ago around work-life balance and the many articles that I trawled through. I don't recall reading anything or seeing anything which describes what you've described, you know, during our conversation, which can help people, you know, restore a bit of balance or reduce a bit of anxiety or, you know, remove a bit of emotion in their lives, which are all things that, you know, when we're feeling overloaded or stressed or struggling a little bit, to hear somebody say you need to improve your work-life balance or you need to get a better balance isn't always helpful. I don't remember reading or seeing anything around minimalism in any of those articles, which is a real missed opportunity, really, because, you know, and I think this is why I was drawn to you in the first instance, Chris, is I could see that there was something there in relation to what you were doing that could have a profound effect and impact on people's lives. And that's why I was keen to understand more about you and the journey that you've been on. So thank you very much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. But it's interesting you say that, because there seems to be murmurings in the US around minimalism, but not so much over here. And I don't know why that is as yet. Maybe it's just a thing that's not caught on, or maybe we're just a little bit too, I don't know, maybe not as brash and confident around our belongings. Maybe a little bit too, I don't know, maybe not, well, a little bit embarrassed. Maybe a little bit embarrassed as a Brit. We go, oh, I don't know, we've got too many things. Surely we don't want to be relaying that to the neighbours and things like that. Whereas it's in the States, they have professional organisers go into people's houses and they will share those. Who have you got coming over this week? Oh, I've got such and such organising my home and things like that. Whereas I think we're a bit too reserved to discuss the stuff that we've got in our home at this stage.
People will say it's the British way to... Almost, again, I'm going back to my childhood. Whenever I went round to my grandparents' house, you would be met in one room, and then if you were fortunate enough, you'd go through to the front room. And it's that very much that kind of, well, this is where we keep the good stuff. This is the everyday stuff. I go back to my schooling, and I can remember this concept or term called Sunday best, where you save your best clothes for Sunday. And I think... It will take us a while to kind of buy into it and for it to catch on in the UK and Britain, because we're almost too proud at this moment. I am generalising, but too proud of our status, what we own, where we live, and all those things associated with it. But actually, when you strip it right back, it doesn't really mean anything. It's just stuff. To go back to your point. Before we take a slightly different route and I get into our quickfire questions, Chris, I want to understand from you, where do you see the biggest opportunity to support individuals and leaders in that organisational space in the next few years? Where do you see that big opportunity being?
I think just understanding that less is more. You know, we use a lot of metaphors in regards to multitasking, so like spinning plates, or we're juggling a lot of things, things like that. We use these metaphors, but what we're actually saying is we've got too much on. And what happens is we then potentially start to forget what our values were. Forget why we're doing that particular thing in the first place. We're bombarded by information. And the desire to buy this and buy that so we can keep up with the Joneses and how you compare yourself to others and things like that. But in a modern work environment for leaders, less is more. Do quality over quantity. And these things, they're not new terms. at all, but you know, they're probably common sense but not common practice. And getting people out of that psyche we spoke about earlier is, you know, that busyness, badge of honor, and FaceTime, that we have to be seen to be busy all the time, which then shows our peers and our colleagues that we're important. Whereas over the next few years, and we have a new batch of leaders, and you know, mostly millennials, and they will be looking at stuff with a more quizzical eye and going, why do we do this? And actually the answer currently could be, it's just the way it's always been done. Or it could be, actually, we don't know why we do that. And therefore, a step of the process gets removed to make things a little bit more slicker. But the opportunity is there for people to start challenging the way things are currently. And I do that regularly. I'll probably annoy a lot of people. I say, why do you do that? And if they don't give a compelling answer, I'll kind of leave a bit of a silence, and I'll go, okay, it's fine. So you want to do those extra steps because, so yes, I think there's more opportunity for people to challenge the status quo.
I agree. I can see it coming. I think we are nearly at that point where the pendulum starts to tip the other way, and people really start to realise that actually there's real value in that phrase that you said there, less is more. We have got too much on. It is causing lots of angst, lots of stress, lots of anxiety, which is fast-forwarding, you know, well-being, mental health conversations. We are going to get there. And I'm just going to replay something you said there around FaceTime. And I'm thinking, FaceTime, we've got an app now, and it's called FaceTime. We tend to use it with the important people in our lives, and that's our way of having a real in-the-moment conversation. What a difference that would make if we had a real FaceTime in-the-moment conversation with people each day, each week in the workplace, rather than these transactional conversations that we've fallen into the trap of having because we're all too busy.
Yep.
Chris, it's fascinating, and I've had lots of thoughts provoked during our conversation, and will continue to ponder and mull over some ideas that you've provoked in my mind. And we're at the point where I like to ask each of my guests some quick fire questions, and this is really just to give the listeners a slightly different flavor and insight into each of my guests. So are you ready to answer some quick fire questions?
Oh yes, I'm looking forward to this, Jeff.
Good man. Okay, first up then, who or what inspires you the most?
So this is a difficult one. They're all difficult, actually. Musicians, generally musicians inspire me. Because they learn their craft for joy. And that then provides so many people joy as well. And it's really admirable. As you can probably put comedians in that as well. So anyone on a journey of like self-discovery where they're trying to support others, I think are very inspirational to me.
Okay, fabulous. Three guests to have to dinner, past or present.
I spent ages trying to figure out the optimal guest for this, and my final choice was Ricky Gervais, Slash from Guns N' Roses, and Jonathan from the Netflix TV show Queer Eye.
Wow!
Exactly. Yep, exactly. That's what I thought.
Okay. I don't think you've had any of them suggested before in the past.
It's really weird. Because I thought of that. I was like, okay, so what would I want to have at dinner? I was like, jokes, stories, and just generally nice, uplifting individuals. So that's what I went for.
You're one of the few people that stuck to three. I usually get all sorts of suggestions from guests, and occasionally we end up with six. Right, okay. A guilty pleasure, should you view it that way, which you do when you have some time to yourself.
So yeah, I I watch 90s R&B and hip hop music videos on YouTube. So I was a teenager in the early 90s, and I massively resonated with that type of music, and hip hop and R&B and rap at that time was really, I learned a lot from that, from those lyrics. I didn't know what some of those words were. I get lost massively, go down the rabbit hole, and I actually really enjoy it. But I try and keep that to myself.
I love it. I love it. A book and or a podcast that you would recommend?
I've just finished reading a book called Be Brilliant Every Day by Andy Cope, who is, he calls himself Dr. Happiness because he's a doctorate in happiness psychology. And the way that book is written is it doesn't need to have massive long words. It doesn't need to give you the science behind it. It just needs to give you some tips around being brilliant every day and why it's possible for everybody to do. And I got through that book. I normally read a few chapters, put it down, and then go back to it every few days. I smashed that book in 2 days. And it was one of the only books I've read recently where I would go back and read it again and then start taking notes from it, because I was so enthralled by just some of the ideas of happiness and things like that. But again, it's not anything brand spanking new.
No.
These are all things that we've spoken about before, but we just don't practice them. So I'd recommend that if people need a bit of an uplift and a few more happiness habits.
Fabulous. What's your one tip for improving overall well-being?
Go for a walk. Get outside. Yeah, it's my go-to thing. A lot of people will probably stare at screens for their job, or will interact with other people. But either way, it's quite draining. So going out for a walk or getting outside into a park or into a bit of nature, yeah, it really does the job for me.
Yeah, I'd echo that every time. Okay, who would you recommend as a future guest on the show?
So I'd be intrigued to know whether you go down this avenue, Jeff. But I would recommend speaking to an unsigned musician.
Okay.
So there's loads, so I won't name too many. But that you'd probably get a real interesting view of how they juggle having a job that pays the bills, having the energy to still be creative and to write and then play music, to try and market it, to try and get people to listen to their work, and then ultimately earn a living from their passion, and all the trials and tribulations that they go through on a regular basis, sometimes working during the day, having to play in the evening, and you know, rinse, repeat, until they get to a point where they either have to make a decision around, right, I'm going to take this on full time, or I'm going to have to do something slightly different. But some of the stories and the trials and tribulations they go through are really inspiring. I'm sure I mentioned they are quite an inspiration to me. So an unsigned musician, I would recommend to get on your show.
I would definitely be up for that. For all those reasons that you've just described there, I think we have a perception of musicians, which is probably not true. So to get a real life story and what goes behind that would be fascinating. How can listeners find out more about you and what you're up to, Chris?
Yes, come and find me. So my website is minimalings.com. So I went for minimalism and things and merged the two words into one. So Minimalings. I'm on LinkedIn, which is just my name, Chris Lovett. You'll see the picture of me. I look like I'm doing karaoke. Feel free to connect. That's me on all social media as well. So Twitter and Instagram, I am Chris Lovett. If people are in South London and they are hearing this prior to the 26th of September, I'm doing a free speaking event for my local community in Beckenham Place Park Mansion. So it's a free kind of grade two listed building where they hold like workshops for people and things like that. So I've decided to offer a free talk on minimalism to up to 50 people. There's about 9 spaces left. So if you're listening to this and interested and it hasn't sold out by then, go onto Facebook, onto the Minimalings Facebook page and grab yourself a seat. Hopefully, you know, some of the stuff that we'll talk about today will be in that, plus a lot more. And there'll be some Haribo for some people as well.
Fabulous.
Of course. Kids and adults love them so. And, you know, it'll be interactive. So there'll be an opportunity for people to, you know, to, if they want to share some of the action that they could be taking away, great. You know, any of the challenges that they're facing, fantastic. And it'll be a little bit humorous as well. So basically going through some of the mistakes that I'd made and the failures of becoming a minimalist.
Well, this show will be going out on the 9th of September. So if you do have any tickets left, we will point people in the direction to get one of those.
Lovely.
Chris, what's your final takeaway for the listeners?
Yeah, really love takeaway. I might get one in a minute, actually. So ultimately, I think that as an individual, and you've got an opportunity to curate your own life. Most, if not all, of the stuff in your environment, you've made a decision to bring that in. You can also make a decision to remove it. Understanding what adds value, what brings you joy, and if you're picking up an item and it doesn't do one of those things, ask the question whether you want to keep it or not. And once you do start to question your own possessions and your own purchasing habits, you can then start to expand it into all areas of your life. So creating more intentionality around your decisions, and then finally doing more of what is important to you. So I'll kind of just leave it on this bit. So the path to realizing your potential could be blocked by all the stuff that you own. Maybe it's time to let it go.
What a lovely message to bring our conversation to a close. Chris, thank you very much indeed for agreeing to take some time out to come on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure to get some insight from you and understand some of your stories. So thank you very much indeed.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, Jeff. Absolutely loved it.
Wow, a big thank you to Chris, and what a great show to bring the curtain down on Series 4. Start a conversation with Chris on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, or Instagram. Find out more about minimalism by reading the latest Ignite blog. Or take a 30-day challenge to declutter an area of your life, and do let Chris and myself know how you're getting on. Details of all the episodes in this series, and indeed all of the series so far, can be found via the link in the show notes. A huge thank you to all of my guests on Series 4. I'll be taking a short break. I'll be back in the new year to work on a writing project. Until then, though, remember this. When you have a balance, enjoy it. When you've got an imbalance, embrace it. For in those moments, we're striving towards achieving our next success, increasing our happiness, or looking for greater fulfillment. Bye for now.